Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. A winter weather advisory for light snow and considerable blowing and drifting snow is in effect for Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Logan, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, Shelby, and Vermilion counties until 4 p.m. this afternoon. That's a winter weather advisory for light snow and considerable blowing and drifting snow. And a weather-related cancellation to tell you about this afternoon. Eastern Illinois University has canceled all off-campus classes for today. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Central Illinois and central Indiana are blanketed with snow today. It's probably the last time this season we'll have a winter view of the garden. Yesterday was the first day of spring. It won't be long and we'll be back out in the garden in earnest. Gardening is our topic this afternoon. Our guest is garden designer Fran Soren. She's going to get our gardening creativity revved up here today. She says gardens, no matter how big or small, are tools for creative awakening. She says gardening can help us envision, dream, experiment, solve problems, and take risks. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions for our guest, Fran Soren. Maybe you have a gardening story you'd like to share with us. What has gardening meant to you? You can join the conversation with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Fran Soren is a regular contributor on NBC's Weekend Today show. She hosts a weekly radio call-in program for Infinity Broadcasting and writes for USA Weekend. She's also the author of Digging Deep, Unearthing Your Creative Roots Through Gardening, the book now available in a paperback edition from Warner Books. And you'll find her on the web at www.fransorin.com, FRANSORIN.com. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Fran, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, it's great to be here, Celeste. I'm sorry you're having bad weather in Chicago.
Yeah, well, what's the weather like in Philadelphia today?
Not great. I just came in from doing errands, and we're starting to work in the gardens here, but it's they're talking about snow later.
Yeah.
And it's down in the 30s, and it has that kind of gray cast, overcast, where you kind of feel like it maybe begins snowing later.
Yeah.
So spring has tricked us this year.
Yeah. Well, it won't be long.
Well, I went to school, college in Chicago, so I'm used to your winters, and I just remember times in April when it was snowing, and then all of a sudden it turns to summer very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. We're a little south of Chicago. We're at Champaign-Urbana at the at the University of Illinois.
Wonderful.
So, so our spring and summer comes a little earlier than for folks in the Windy City.
Yes.
What do you look forward to most at this time of the year when things are just starting to emerge?
That's a good question. The first thing that came to my mind, the smells. The smells. There's something about spring. You know, I felt it a few times in February even. We had some balmy days. There's just a wonderful smell in the air that is so intoxicating, and it feels, I think, it's great for us emotionally and physically. That's why I'm so big on walking and being out with nature. I think it's a sense of a new beginning. Each spring there is that sense of, oh my gosh, and just the birthing of things. And no matter how old we get, there's always the playful youngster inside of us that gets excited over this new beginning.
Yeah. And no matter how many times we've seen that hyacinth and the tulips come up, it's still such a surprise.
Isn't it? Or the snowdrops. You just can't believe in the midst of snow that there could be something flowering. And yeah, you're right. The tulips is, I mean, and when they have the tight buds and then all of a sudden they begin to open and emerge and you see incredible colors. To me, it has always been a miracle. It continues to be a miracle.
Hmm. Well, that's one of the great things about this time of year in the garden. There's so much possibility.
I think so. And, you know, there actually has been studies done. There's a fellow from Europe who does psychological studies on people who garden. And he showed that people who plant spring bulbs in the fall tend to be more optimistic. They're great optimists. Why? Because they don't need immediate results. They can hold off because they know the benefits 4, 5, 6 months down the road will be accrued when those bulbs bloom. So I find that very interesting.
Mm. That possibility, does that help explain why gardening is such a creative endeavor?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is something so primordial or primitive. It's what Jung would call the collective unconscious, where as human beings, our need to connect with the soil, after all, that's how we survived for thousands and thousands of years. And if you go even back in more recent times to Native American cultures with the, you know, the buffalo dance and all the different dances that they give thanks to gods for nature, for them reaping the bounty of nature, from nature. So, yes, I do believe that when we get out in that soil, it's generations and generations and generations of us who just, it does give us hope. And it's also sustenance. I mean, think about it, historically, what gardening is about. And, you know, I had a friend over for dinner last night, and we were talking about John Adams. And it is shocking when you think that all of our forefathers, a lot of the major ones, were so involved personally with gardening and how Adams needed to be out in the garden and contemplate and be in nature and walking. And I find that very invigorating to learn this about these gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, also Washington and Jefferson.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Jefferson's my idol. When my kids were young, we went to Monticello as much as possible. He was an extraordinary individual, yes.
Yeah. Now, when you were a child, your mother gardened. What was the garden of your childhood like?
Well, I was raised in very middle-class circumstances. My dad's a social worker, and I was born in Cleveland and raised in Dallas, Texas, but my real childhood I consider being in Rochester, New York. And our home was quite small, and, you know, what I would consider a smaller suburban garden. And my mother didn't have the luxury of going to gardening centers and buying what she wanted. We were always on a very strict kind of economic situation. But somehow she created beauty, always created beauty. She was extraordinary, this woman. And I just remember the peonies and the lilacs and the roses and how she would bring them in on our dining room table. And just the abundance and the smells and the beauty. And you know, after a few days, how the petals would fall onto the table. And how I'd see her out there working and sweating. And all three of us kids, we had to help. This was not by choice. You know, we had to grow vegetables. And we had to help my father mow the lawn and pull the weeds. Back then, we pulled weeds. It wasn't about using Chemlawn.
Yeah. Thinking, you tell the story there of your mother and the lilacs and the peonies. Oh. And just think how heady that was when you were a kid in the whole house. You know, when your mother brought in those flowers. And
it's really, you know, Celeste, you're raising such a good point. It's so true. And I always think we had a screen side door leading off the side of the house and a back porch, screen porch. And it always is it's synchronized with the sound of the screen door kind of flapping open and shut. And I just wonder today, that's what I'm trying to instill in people, that kind of lazy slowness, the beauty wafting through, the smells wafting through the household. It's so delicious, and I think it's so important in childhood and adulthood to have what I consider necessity. I mean, these are necessities. These are not luxuries. To have that relationship with beauty and nature.
What if your canvas is small? What if your garden is contained in a box or hanging in a window?
Yeah, plenty of people, because I give lots of workshops, and to me, I've expanded the word gardening to mean strictly the relationship between a person and a plant. So if you are tending to one plant, you are gardening if you really nurture it, care for it, water it. And I think today there are so many different ways between container gardening and window box gardening. And with all the different kinds of lights we have, the fluorescent lights that are no longer just the long fluorescent lights, you can literally on a coffee table put in a regular light that happens to have the blue light spectrum that helps a plant grow, and you can get things to grow that way.
Mm.
So I think the limitations are really in the mind of the beholder, and if you want to garden, you will find a way.
Yeah. Boy, I'm going back to childhood again, and what a thrill it was to have a milk carton growing a plant or have sprout the avocado.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
And in college, we actually took the top off a pineapple and had a pineapple plant going.
You're kidding. Now, explain how you did that.
We just took the top off, and I think there was a little bit of the flesh left on it, and we put it in water. And presto.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yep.
That's a great idea.
So lots of things you can do, you know, that don't cost a lot of money.
And and when you have children, I mean, there's nothing more wonderful than getting them. Right now is a great time of year to get them to grow tomato seeds, because you can't go wrong with tomato seeds. You can grow them right in a window, a sunny window, and they'll take off, and kids get so excited about that.
Mm. Well, tell us the story of how you became a gardener.
Well, I guess out of, you know, we never know until we look back, do we? If you really are listening and letting your instincts lead you throughout life, I was just a weekend gardener like everybody else. And as you're recalling in college, I remember on, I used to live in a basement apartment. I was at the University of Chicago, and I ended up with over 50 plants there in my basement apartment. And then when I got married, wherever we lived initially, whether it was an apartment or a condominium, I had plants and window boxes in our first home. I was out, it was an older home, and I was out there kind of hacking away. But it's in the home I live in now where it is what I call an aesthetically challenged neighborhood. It's a development in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And I had just had my second child. I had a toddler and then my Erica. And literally was left with a bare lot and hired somebody to come in and do the front yard. And so it began because it was so ugly here.
Mm.
And Celeste, when I tell you, I thought I was the least creative person around when I started this, because I always thought of myself more as the business model. I was in television, in marketing and sales and television, broadcasting. And never thought of myself as a creative individual. So gardening really opened me up in a way that I never expected in a lifetime to be living.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when you are passionate about something and you want to learn, that's what spurs you on. I'm never embarrassed about what I don't know. I just want to get to the knowledge.
Yeah. Well, and every gardener, I consider myself a beginner, but every gardener will tell you stories of how that didn't work.
Yeah.
So it's a really nice lesson in humility, isn't it?
Well, I think, and even when so-called gardening experts, most gardeners tend to be not only kind people, but you're right, humble in that, if I told you at this level how many failures I have still, and I just kind of, you know, you just say, this is part of the game. This is, and after all, who do we think we are? Because we are in partnership at best with nature. We're not in charge. So there's constantly lessons to be learned in the garden.
Hmm. Garden designer Fran Soren is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of Digging Deep, Unearthing Your Creative Roots, through gardening. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, gardening stories. All are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. The foreword to this book, Digging Deep, was written by a friend and teacher of yours at the University of Chicago, Erica Frome. She mentions your love of the piano in the foreword.
Yes.
Has the piano guided your creativity in the garden?
Yes.
How?
Yes. I think I was very lucky. I started taking piano in Dallas when I was 5, and my mother was smart. When we moved to Rochester, she right away got me enrolled at the Eastman School of Music. And remember, I was raised in the 50s and 60s, and little girls were supposed to be little girls, and you know, I was very, very socialized, but something happened at the piano where I would just go into a trance, which I learned later was an altered state of consciousness, very much like lying on my bed and reading a great book when I got home from school. But the emotions that came out, I remember my mother fixing dinner in the other room and yelling to me, "Franny, that sounds beautiful." And I literally would be sobbing, Celeste. I was so emotional over what I was playing. And it was only, and even when I was not just in high school, but at Chicago, I used to study there, and as an adult, I actually found a teacher at the Curtis Institute who would teach me because I wanted to continue with it. It really opened me up to the possibility of an altered state of consciousness, and that is, in truth, the best of who we can be. That's what we're all looking for, after all, is to get out of the daily realm of self-consciousness and to get to a better place that kind of transcends the ordinary. So the music throughout, and now I study cello, but the music throughout guides me totally. So it gave me, it opened up my neural pathways and my emotional pathways, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting, you just said a moment ago when you started, you had this large canvas in front of you and you started gardening, and it was a horrible mess. Mm-hmm. You said, "I wasn't a creative person. I didn't think of myself as a creative person." Mm-hmm. Do you find that with your clients in garden design?
Yes. That's why, as a matter of fact, I only take on clients that I feel, it's almost like a therapist where you can smell or feel if somebody has the ability. It's not about creativity, Celeste, because we all have the creative fire inside of us, maybe some more so than others. There's certainly genetics in play here. But in truth, it's about the openness of the person and the willingness to try new things. So I can pretty well sense that because I want somebody to have that experience when I work with them as a garden designer. I don't want to go in and create for them and then just have them, you know, this is not a living room. Your garden is a living tapestry, and not to be intricately involved with it, even if you have somebody design it for you, is a real pity as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
So, but most people do not think of themselves as creative.
Yeah. So where do you begin with somebody who says, "Oh, I can't do that"?
I absolutely tell them I don't want to hear it, and I tell them that's absolutely bunk. I had a great theory teacher once who told me, music theory teacher, who said he could teach anybody to play an instrument, and he was right. Anybody can garden. And once I tell them that and I don't let them censor themselves and I show them, because I'll kind of take them through, almost mentor them through to get them the first place. It's very much like my book talking about, well, imagine, what is it you think you want in your garden? And where have you traveled that has grabbed you? When I was, many years ago, I read an article in Travel and Leisure magazine about the Luberon in Provence. Never been there. And, of course, it grabbed me. Eventually, I did go there, and much of my garden now in the suburbs of Philadelphia is very much like Provence. So something about it struck me, and most people have those sensory memories or imaginations, something in their life, whether it's through movies, magazines, TVs, traveling, childhood memories, that we can work with that to get them to open up and say, oh, my goodness, I really do want this. And, oh, I remember this from my childhood. And, oh, wouldn't that be great? And I really do love yellow, purples, and reds together. So then we have something to play with. And that's when the fun really begins.
Yeah. Tell us about the man you work with who was finding it very difficult to sketch things out, a chef named Elliot.
Oh, yeah, well, there are different people, and people, when they say to me, like Elliot, that they can't sketch things out, and then all of a sudden, because I also had that problem where I purposely made myself take art courses, again, this self-censoring, we're comparing ourselves to other people, and he was doing that also, and you just don't allow it. You just kind of let people go and don't let them get away with it, but just let them kind of play and let them know they're in a safe environment. You know, when I got into gardening and broadcasting, I would take to every local TV station a batch of flowers and some scissors, some pruners, and most times the news directors were males. And I would say to them, okay, I want you to arrange these flowers. Can you imagine that? And they'd look at me like I was crazy. I mean, can you imagine walking into, the head of your radio station and doing that? And do you know they actually ended up doing it? And they got it. Most of them ended up getting it. And they were very self-conscious at the beginning. It's only our self-consciousness, like with Elliot, that stops us from moving forward. And we censor ourselves. And I think there's a big mistake in American culture about feeling like we need to be experts. And how can you learn something new if you need to be an expert? There have to be beginners in life, though. I mean, I find it very exciting to be a beginner at something.
Yeah. Well, what did you do with Elliot? How did you use his... You know, here's a guy who has some talents in cooking with
yes.
food. So he knows color.
He does know color. And ultimately, he was great.
Yeah.
And with Elliot, it was a matter of, look, you work with metacognition. It's very, very easy, whether it's Elliot. I've worked with lawyers. I've worked with right now a couple down below, which is very interesting in my development. And they approached me. And they're both very, very strong-willed. He's a lawyer, and she's also in business. And I had two consults with them, and they're fighting over how to do something. And I just listen to them, and I see where their strengths are. And just like with Elliot, he was much easier in a funny way because he already had, it's like me with the music, there was something there to pull from. So when he understood with cooking that really, what does he do? He started with nothing. And once he understood that, then we began to play.
And the lawyers, how have you gotten them to play?
Well, lawyers are it depends on the lawyer themselves. But look, first of all, they're verbally, by and large, bright people. And so if you think, because my background is also in improvisation, if you think that speaking is an art form and there's improvisation in it, as you and I are doing right now. I don't know what you're going to ask me, and I don't know what I'm going to answer. So it's all new. This moment is new. So with lawyers, I think the use of words can be very powerful. So when I try to get them to describe the feelings they want in a garden, what do you want to feel when you walk out? What do you want? And get them to use adjectives. That gets them to open up and to become descriptive, and that's a way to start getting them connected to what's happening.
And if you're a good lawyer, you've got to be a good listener.
Yes. That's a good point, yes.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, dentists, by and large, the people that work on our teeth are, by and large, many of them are wonderful sculptors. They work with their fine motor skills are so excellent. So they have an inroad already. So there's a way with practically anybody, and again, if somebody's closed, it's less about what they do as a profession. It's really more about what's going on the inside.
Mm-hmm. And taking the time, it sounds like it's very important.
I think so. As I believe me, I've turned down jobs on the main line with people who literally just wanted me to come in and do it. And I said, thank you very much, but no thank you. I don't want to do another garden with my, you know, with my taste in it. I want it to be your taste. So otherwise, it's not exciting for me.
Mm. Well, after sitting down with your book for some time, I thought to myself, well, now here's some advice I could use. What do I like doing? And one of the things I love to do is read. And I thought back to literature that where you have gardening or you have nature. And I thought of Kew Gardens, the story by Virginia Woolf. And I went back to that, and I'm so eager now to sit down and reread that carefully. It's been years and years and years since I've read it. But I do remember there is a sense of color,
yes,
and there is a sense of movement, and there is a sense of memory,
yep,
in that piece.
Or how about, and that's a great point, or any, I'm not probably as literature prone as you, but when you think about A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, or any of the Little Women. I mean, I always think about, is it Beth the one who's always out in nature running after Laurie? So there's nature, you're right, in your reading. And probably because you're so deeply involved with reading and literature that it can emote wonderful feelings for you.
What about music? Are there pieces of music that you find?
Oh, yeah.
That you turn to over and, you know, again,
sure,
and again?
Sure. Sure. I can just, I mean, I have tons and tons of CDs, and it's anything from Mozart to Bach. I mean, right now, of course, the Bach cello concertos I'm very into because I'm, you know, playing them, trying to learn how to play them, let's put it that way. That's another great lesson in life. Take cello when you become an adult. That is pure humility. That will stretch anybody. But sure, I mean, there are times where I'm ready to cry when I hear music. It's just so beautiful. I call it excruciatingly beautiful. And I think opening up to the beauty, it also can be painful. It's exhilarating and painful. You feel everything because, after all, isn't life all of that? Isn't life, here we are in this wonderful moment of living, and we all know we're going to die eventually. So it's all of the above. And music is, you know, when you think about what Beethoven did, death, or Mozart, who died at such a young age, and that these people, it was like a piece of God was so present in them. And it, for me, it's just, it is paradise when I listen to certain pieces of music.
Hmm. Listeners, I'd like to hear from you this afternoon. Our guest is garden designer Fran Soren, author of Digging Deep, Unearthing Your Creative Roots Through Gardening. You can join us this afternoon with questions about gardening. Perhaps you've got a gardening story you'd like to tell. What have been your inspirations for areas of your garden? 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. One of the fun exercises that you have in this book, Digging Deep, is something called letting your imagination go, go wild. What would you do if there were no limits on time or money in your garden?
You're such a good questioner. I'm not sure. I don't have a quick answer for you. I'm not sure that would be good, actually. That's my first response. Isn't that interesting? That I think the fact that I've had to be so judicious over the years, the fact that I live on this aberrant, very steeply sloping, half-acre, diamond-shaped lot has made the challenge of it much more exciting. And I do think without limits that we aren't as creative, possibly, not always, but possibly. And that's certainly true in jazz, for sure, in playing jazz. So I don't have an answer for you, really.
That's interesting, because I like that question because there's so much to do in our garden that by asking yourself that question, you can kind of see what's really important, and then you can pare back.
Well, I think that's what I try to do with that exercise on the other side of it. I think when you give people their dream, say, you can do anything and have anything, and let's brainstorm, and, you know, you have $1 zillion, and then that just opens up the possibility. You're 100% right. And that's what imagination and envisioning are all about. And then we get down to the brass tacks later about, okay, now let's prioritize. And what are your needs? It's always form versus function. So your point is well taken. If you ask me in a new palette, if I'm creating a new garden from scratch, I think I'd probably have a very different answer.
Yeah. I don't know how you handled it when you had that huge blank canvas, because when my husband and I moved to our home, it was a huge canvas. It wasn't blank at all, but it was overwhelming.
It is. It's, you know, that's a great word, Celeste. It's daunting. I understand how daunting it is to people. And it really is a matter of learning it. All it is problem solving. Yes, there's artistry involved, but I think if people read my book, and it's not going to give you all the answers, I think it can help you organize your thoughts and get inside of yourself to see what are the important issues, what do I really want, what are the, some of the decisions I'll have to make, and some of the guidelines. And even if you do end up hiring a landscape designer or a garden designer, at least you're in charge, and you can help kind of pilot through with them rather than just being the recipient of somebody else's ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, for our mental health, what we had to do is take it a little piece at a time and turn our back.
I think that's actually my next book, is we're doing a book on vignettes, gardening vignettes, to teach people that, because I think exactly what you're describing happens, except you had the endurance and the fortitude to continue. But very often people get turned off because of that. And how did that evolve for you when you took a little piece at a time?
It worked pretty well.
Well, there you go.
Although we're continuing to edit the worked on spaces, but it's coming together bit by bit. We've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. We've made some mistakes, but we've had a good time.
You've had a good time, and again, this idea that mistakes are bad. How else can you learn if you don't make mistakes?
Yeah, but sometimes...
Oh, they're costly.
Sometimes,
but again, you know what that is? I feel like the laughing Buddha. So... it's almost like, so we're not talking life and death here, and it also puts things into perspective.
Yeah. But when you put a plant in, you have such high hopes.
Always.
Yeah. And then...
but remember what when it dies, it's not your fault most times, unless you just haven't watered it or overwatered it. Again, we're not in charge.
Yeah.
And that's what I have really learned over the years.
And there's always another plant to be put in that spot.
And there's always another season. You know, there are some summers. I know you guys have been hit with droughts as we have, and I do follow the water restrictions, and I don't have in-ground sprinklers. I think I'm the only person in my neighborhood who doesn't. And, in fact, my garden has just gone, you know, down the tubes in July. But what I say to myself is, next year.
Hmm.
And I think that's a very healthy attitude, is to understand this is just the cycle of nature, as are we.
Do you have some suggested plants for dry periods? And also,
oh, sure.
I'm a gardener who doesn't really like to be out in the heat of the day.
I don't blame you.
In
and your heat can be bad.
July and August, it can be just horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Early morning is always a good time if you can schedule it in, or... you know, early evening, dusk is also a good time. Absolutely, I can give you a list right now. I love, for sun or shade, some of these work well in both, and I'll tell you which ones. I love coral bells, the Heuchera and the Palace Purple in particular, which is kind of, it's a pomate leaf, and it's a deep burgundy red, and I've got to tell you, it's one of the all-time great plants. The flower is almost inconsequential. That's a wonderful plant. Nepeta, which a lot of people know about, Nepeta dropmore, is the catmint, and that's a wing kind of blue-flowered plant that just keeps on blossoming all summer long. Artemisia, Powis Castle, any of the silver-leaf plants mean that they're from the Mediterranean, which means that they do well in dry climates. And it also means, by and large, that they need the sun. So Artemisia, Powis Castle, which is just a wonderful, roundish, silvery plant that gets huge over the summer, just like a big ball. And, of course, lavender is a great, great plant. And I think in your zone, you guys are in zone 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can handle it very nicely there. And, again, that's a sun plant. And then all of the salvias. I mean, you want me to go on and on and on and on. But if people want to know specifically, they can feel free to write me. If they want more information, they can write me at my website.
Okay, very good. Another question. How about some suggestions for late summer color and late summer, you know, when you sit out in the garden and things are going well and it offers you a respite? The color and the texture offer you a coolness?
Yes, yes. I think that time of year, so we're talking going like from mid-August on through September before the fall really hits, before the asters take off. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So that time of year, very often, what is happening, I'm very big on perennial grasses. And the grasses, the greenness of the miscanthus, they're the huge grasses, or millennia, and they all have these beautiful inflorescence, the flowers at the end. So you get the movement of them, and they're quite stunning. And then you have plants like Caryopteris, which is a blue silver-leafed plant that is also very cool and very pretty. And there are also tons of salvias that time of year in every single color. And in your USDA zone, as well as my USDA zone, many of them are not perennials. They are annuals. We treat them as annuals, but they are well worth it because of the magnificent color that they offer that time of year.
Yeah. The gray-green of Russian sage is, I enjoy that.
Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
It's a
nice plant.
Oh, it is. It is absolutely beautiful. And the list goes on. I think, again, you know, in late summer, too, helianthemums are wonderful plants. And then you get more into the yellow oranges. And it just depends on how much color you can handle, how much you want.
What does the helium? I can't even get that out.
I know. Doing the crowd. It's one of the sunflowers, actually, but it is a perennial. And it comes, and the helium also, they're from the same families, and you can get them in that golden yellow. You can also get them in that rust, deep rust tones, which can be stunning that time of year.
How long did it take before you kind of had a handle on the Latin?
Oh, I still don't. people laugh at me because I have that upstate New York accent. I really get the syllables wrong a lot. And I just kind of go with it, and I have learned over the years. And again, I'm not embarrassed about it. That's the interesting thing. I let people correct me, horticulturists. I don't mind at all, but it is important if you're going to work with the plant material on a regular basis to know it, because in truth, a lot of the plants have same common names.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go to, especially when you travel, it's really fun if you're traveling to different arboretums throughout the country. You guys have a great arboretum in Chicago.
In Chicago. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure on other parts of Illinois and Indiana. And I've always loved to do that and learn names of plants. That's really a good way to learn plant names.
And there are books out there. Of course, there are so many. I was at the library last Saturday, and they just went on and on and on.
Yes.
In regard to books that would have the Latin names and how to pronounce them.
Yes.
And good illustrations, pictures. Do you got a recommendation?
Yeah, for sure. There are two that I keep in stock. One is the A to Z Encyclopedia. It was put out by American Horticultural Society, and Judy Zook, who was the head of Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, in Christopher Brickell or the editor-in-chief. That's like your basic, if I was going to say get one book as a reference book, get that one. And then another one I keep on file is Botanica, and Illustrated A to Z, and it's how to cultivate them with over 10,000 garden plants. And that's quite wonderful. Now, the truth is, though, neither of those give you the pronunciation. So you have to go to a botany book or another book that I have by Timber Press, How to Identify Flowering Plant Families. And I think it does have the pronunciation in this book.
Okay, I will look for those. You mentioned the Chicago Botanical Garden in Glencoe, which is lovely. There's a lovely garden in St. Louis. Are there others in the Midwest that you could recommend?
Oh, gee. I'm thinking. Certainly Minnesota. I mean, there are dozens if you get out toward. I mean, California is a haven for tremendous gardens. Arizona. All you really have to do is get online and check it out. And there are also, and what I suggest doing for anybody, is join your local garden club. If you live close to Chicago and you want to join the Chicago Horticultural Society, that's great. But if not, there are local garden clubs, and they can open you up to lots of information.
And I should mention the Morton Arboretum is another beautiful garden.
Yes.
And that is beautiful at any time of the year.
Yes, and of course, if you come east, I'm very proud of the New York Botanical Garden and Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And the garden that's really going down as one of the great American gardens is 5 minutes away from me, and that's Chanticleer. And that's been created in the past 15 years. It's an extraordinary garden.
Mm. And in Rockford, Illinois, if listeners up in northern Illinois, there's the Anderson Garden, which is it's a privately owned garden, and the man opens his home up, his garden up, during the growing season.
You're kidding.
I haven't been there yet.
I'm writing it down right now. Rockville, Illinois?
Rockford.
Oh, Rockford, Illinois.
Rockford.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. And it's, I believe it is near the Rock River. I'm imagining it to be a beautiful place. So.
And I'll tell you one other thing that's a hoot. For anybody who plans on going to England outside of seeing English gardens, which are extraordinary also, when they have the open days in England, you buy a yellow book and it tells you the whose garden will be open when. Celeste, I've got to tell you, it's one of the great entertainments, best form of entertainment I've ever had, going to these private gardens of people who garden in England. Because the culture there is so fascinating, and how everybody's into gardening in such an intense way.
Hmm. What is there something that sets apart an English gardener from an American gardener?
Oh, yeah. Our culture is not immersed in gardening. As much as 2/3 of all American households do garden, and it's the number one pastime, we still don't garden with the intensity. Remember, after all, I believe England is a country of 30 million people. It's much smaller. They have gray skies all the time. It would be like living in Seattle or Rochester, New York. And their entire culture is based on gardening. The closest thing I can pull it into is comparing it to our culture that's based on sports or baseball. Everybody gardens there.
Wow.
And they know, believe me, they know the names. And you stand behind these gardens and the gardens with these people on canes teetering along, the old men and women, and you hear them going, "Oh, isn't that lovely?" And then they mention the name, and I'm just standing there in awe thinking they have spent their life doing this, and it's very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, before, it might be a little while here before we can get to England or get to a botanical garden. But you really like the idea of going in your neck of the woods, wherever we are, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, taking a 10-minute nature walk.
Oh, my goodness. I think if I had to choose one thing out of everything that's in that book, it would be that. I think taking a nature walk wherever you live, whether it's urban, suburban, country, it doesn't matter. I think it can literally, and I don't want to sound new age, I think it can help to transform your life.
Hmm.
I think it's a kind of Zen meditation, and you come back with such an appreciation, again, for how fragile this earth is and how it all needs to work together and how we are just a piece of it.
Hmm.
And the overwhelming beauty. I mean, this is a gift that we're alive, and we need to learn to treat it with respect and value it.
Hmm.
And really, what's more important? What, outside of loving each other and our children and relationships, what is more important than nature, our environment?
Don't foul your nest.
Yep.
One last question for you. Your radio program, you do a weekly radio show?
I don't. You know, I didn't want to correct you at the beginning. I did for Infinity Broadcasting. Now I am the CBS network. I'm a radio news contributor for CBS.
And is it possible to get your broadcast on?
Yes, it is.
As iPods?
Yeah. You can
podcasts?
Go on, actually, I don't know if they have it on the network. I'm on my local affiliate here. First of all, my website every week, we have the local spots being played.
Okay.
But also on KYW1060.com, you can get my...